Check, check. There we go. All right, let's go ahead and get this party started. I love these rooms that are wider than they are long. I'll be running back and forth for the next hour and 15 minutes, and I absolutely cannot see you people at all. So you're going to spend the next 75 minutes not seeing my eyes, otherwise I'll be blinded. All right, we've got quite a bit of content to get through here. I'm going to try and leave some time for Q&A afterwards, but since we are the last session of the day, we can hold over as long as we want for some Q&A, and then also down the Ask the Experts if you want to have more conversation on this. We're going to be talking about the new SharePoint 2013 app story, specifically in relation to Windows Azure, and we're going to take a real-world view on migrating existing legacy on-premise apps into Windows Azure and SharePoint 2013. This is a big topic. There's a lot here. Try and cover as much as we can within the 75 minutes, but it still really is only an introduction to the topic. It's certainly not exhausted, but I hope to give you at least enough information to get started. Here's all the about me. If you want to get a hold of me and contact me, the information is down there on the bottom. You can hit my blog at sharepointcowboy.com, leave me a comment. Send me an email. Please put SPC 2012 in the title so it doesn't go directly into the round bin. And if you want to hit me on Facebook and Twitter, you can feel free to give that a shot if you like. Those who know me in this room will tell you I don't hang out there much. Social for me is at the pub with a beer in my hand, not in front of my computer. But you may try it if you like. A couple of things for the devs in the audience, if you're not already aware of them. CKS Dev is a set of tools developed by the community for SharePoint 2010 development at this stage. There will probably be a 2013 release as well that extend the default tools that come out of the box. If you're writing code for SharePoint and you're not using CKS Dev, shame on you. You're making your job too hard. Second of all, if you're not familiar with the Patterns and Practices guidance, we put a ton of work early in the product cycle on developing some really robust code samples. So if you're still doing some 2010 on-prem work, there's a ton of good information in the Patterns and Practices. You can get it at spg.codeplex.com. Whoops. Back one, not quite ready to go there yet. Okay, so what we're going to do for the next 75, 70-ish odd minutes is try and get you familiar with some of the concepts that you may not have been familiar with in the past. For those of you, us, me included, who've been used to doing server-side on-premise development with a lot of full trust code, and we can do anything we want on the box, and the admins can't stop us, things are changing a little bit in 2013. And it's a bit of a transition, not just in how we approach the design and architecture of our applications, but also in the way we just fundamentally think about where our applications live, where our data resides, how they talk to each other. It's a bit intimidating at first. There's a lot of stuff you have to learn. I won't lie to you. The learning curve can be a little bit steep, especially if you're not all that familiar with HTML and JavaScript, or you were once and then went to real code, I mean a different type of code, and then now you're coming back. To JavaScript, it's a little bit of a change. I reached out to a friend of mine, knowing that this can be a little bit challenging, looking for maybe some words of encouragement that I could pass on to you, a fellow who's also known for the nice big black hat he wears, and this is what he said. Welcome to the dark side, my friends. It's now all in the cloud. Yeah, when you can get to it. All right. We're going to start a little bit just talking about some background direction on the Azure piece of the pie specifically. And then we're going to go in and talk a little bit about design because we do have to think a bit differently now than we did in the past. We're going to spend a good portion of the time talking about how we actually create, deploy, and manage these new solutions in the cloud. And then finally talk about the whole delivery model and what it looks like in the Office store and so forth. So there's a lot of ground to cover here. Now look, I know it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I want to be at the bar too, okay? So let's try and get through the next 75 minutes, okay? And then everyone's welcome to buy me a beer after that if you like the session. I highly encourage that. We're going to try and get through this, but I know there are some of you who were out late last night, because I was and I saw you. So I know you're a little bit tired, trying to make it through the last session. So I went back to my friend in the hat there and asked him if there was anything he could do to help me out, get you motivated, and really get this crowd going this afternoon, you know, because he's a positive motivational type. So he sent me an official wand of motivation, and I'll be using this on anybody in the audience who falls asleep. So if you sat in the front rows, bad idea. Look, it even makes a sound. That's cool. All right. And if you do get out of line, I have to hit you with that. It'll be on YouTube in 5 minutes. So really, let's try and keep it awake, okay? There's coffee out there. Sneak over and get some if you need to. All right, let's rock and roll. So let's start a little bit talking about direction and where we're going with this whole Azure thing. At some point, sooner or later, if they haven't done it already, someone in your enterprise, probably your boss, is going to come to you and say, hey, this cloud thing, shouldn't we be looking at it? What do we need to know about Azure? Well, here's a slide you take to your boss. Okay? This is why we should be looking at Azure. First of all, a lot of big companies are using it and doing a lot of cool things with it. Secondly, there's a lot more to the platform than just VMs out in the cloud somewhere. There's a pretty robust story around hosting websites, mobile applications, rich media applications, and big data. But really, when it comes down to it, there's a handful of things that you need to know about the Azure story. The first is cost. Although technically the cost of technology goes down over time, we like to buy bigger and bigger and shinier things with more blinky lights, so they always seem to be the most expensive we can possibly get. When we have to buy and own all those things, it's an expensive cost for the enterprise. When it's out there in the cloud and we're sharing a lot of that stuff with other folks, our individual cost of ownership goes down. The cost of hosting in the Azure environment, depending on what you're doing now, is commensurate with a lot of the other offerings out there on the market, in some cases a little bit better. And certainly paying for only what you need makes a lot of sense. Secondly, and this is the one that really does it for me, flexibility. I don't need to plan all this hardware that I'm going to have to buy and who's going to provision it and how I'm going to manage it and who's going to rack it and deal with all the speeds and feeds and all that nonsense. I get what I need, I dial it up and down on demand as I have to, and I only get billed for the stuff that I actually use. So that's a tremendous advantage. Second of all, or third of all, in the cloud you can go big on a moment's notice, right? Take that pokey old SQL server you got sitting under a desk somewhere right now and try go big data with that guy, or do what some of you I know have done and made it your SharePoint SQL server. I know who you are. I've been in your companies. It's a bad story, right? You have to buy a lot of hardware and maintain all that stuff when you need to go big or you have big growth spurts. Or worse, if you're in a seasonal type of business where you have massive spurts at only specific times of the year, it's very expensive to let that equipment sit idle for when you're not using it. Performance. I'd like to tell you performance is absolutely fantastic. We're not quite there yet, really, on any of the cloud offerings. They're more focused on platform stability than performance. However, it's pretty good. For most of the solutions that we'll be developing for talking to our IIS websites and back-ending to our SQL, performance is pretty spot on. Stability, pretty darn good, all things considered. Trust me, it wasn't Azure that's been down the last few days. That was a local problem. The stability story is really good, especially in the U.S. and Europe. Some of the other regions around the world are still coming online for a good stability picture. But if you're in one of the major markets, stability is excellent. And then finally, DR is really good as well. With that geo-replicated stuff, you don't have to worry about that. It just happens. You spin up a SQL VM, and it just gets replicated out somewhere in another data center. And you don't have to worry about it. Don't even think about it. Okay? So these are the reasons why. Now let's talk a little bit about the way we have to change our ideas going forward around how we design our applications. Let's talk about where we've been. So specifically in SharePoint, our solutions were comprised of a number of specific artifacts, typically something like web parts and application pages and whatever it is we were deploying out there to our SharePoint solution. We describe all of those with a manifest that gets activated and deployed via feature, wrap it all up into a WSP, and it either runs full trust or it runs in the sandbox. Okay, we're all used to this story by now. That's a great story unless you're a developer coming on and don't know anything about SharePoint, in which case this is all Greek to you. The learning curve for this is absolutely tremendous. We all know we've been there over the last few years, okay? This is not easy stuff to wrap your head around if you're just coming from a .NET world, or worse, heaven forbid you're coming from LAMP or a Java environment, okay? This is tough. So part of the new strategy is to try and bring in those developers and solution architects and whatnot, who have expertise in other areas but not necessarily in SharePoint, and let's make the tent bigger. Let's see how many more people we can get in to really extend the platform. To do that, we had to fundamentally alter the way that we deliver the extensibility story. So in 2013, our component story is quite different. We start with the concept of an app. An app can be anything. It can be a list that you deploy into SharePoint, what we would formally call list templates and list instances. Now they're all called apps. It can be a remote website. It can pretty much be whatever you define it. But 9 times out of 10, it's some web-delivered component running on an IIS server, an Apache server somewhere, and spitting out content. It's running on the web, not necessarily in your enterprise. It could be out there remote hosted somewhere. It could be a third party that you don't even have anything to do with. Think of the Facebook model of extending with all these external third party providers. So you don't necessarily even control these new components. It can be consuming data from external sources or from your SharePoint environment or both. There's going to be a lot of code running on the client. That's different from how we've done it in the past, where the bulk of our delivery was server-side code. Now we're changing to the HTML JavaScript model of everything running on the client end. That's a drastically different way of thinking about how we program these solutions. We're also changing the way that we manage authentication and authorization. We have to. We're no longer necessarily in a Windows logon or claims environment. We may have a third-party provider on a server out somewhere, has no visibility into our network. How do we deal with that situation? Well, we do it through OAuth in the new model. And then finally, we exchange a lot of data with REST because most of what we're going to be doing is remote calls, typically async or almost entirely async, using the REST framework that's built into SharePoint 2013, but not just for SharePoint. So this picture, when we compare the two side by side, is really, really different. There's a lot for those of us who have been around the SharePoint game for a long time to learn or relearn. For other folks coming onto the platform, this really isn't all that different. If you talk to people who are building modern UI type stuff, they know this story, right? This doesn't surprise them. It's just different for us, and we have to learn to adapt. Now, the good news is that a lot of thought has been given to this problem and how we're going to tackle it. Now, I'm going to be the first one to tell you this is a version 1 release. Not everything is perfect. It never is the first time you try something new. But a lot of effort has been to put in making the best effort we can in delivering a good app story in the new platform. And I think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how well some of this stuff works. So in SharePoint 2013, here's what our fundamental model looks like for the most part. Okay. We have our platform. It hasn't changed all that drastically from SharePoint 2010. There's some new goodness in it. We've got our sites and our content and our services, and that's how we consume information and pass it back and forth. We have an API that talks to it, just like we always have in the past. But now, on the other end, is our app, right? And our app has its own set of components. It has a package that gets delivered into SharePoint. That app is comprised, instead of web parts and application pages and a bunch of ASPX, it's now comprised primarily of HTML and JavaScript, not exclusively, although you'll hear me say that a lot. You can still run traditional .NET apps in this model, or you can run Java apps. It doesn't have to be any of the above, or any specific one of the above. And then you have data. And in between both of those is OAuth that allows us to communicate with each other back and forth, so the data requests flow from our app with a token to get authorized, talk to the content in SharePoint, and then go back to our app. All right, it's pretty straightforward. That's oversimplified, obviously. There's a lot of nuances in how that works. But the overall story is pretty good. Now, there are essentially two ways to host an app to have a SharePoint 2013 app. It can either be what we call on-box, which means hosted in SharePoint as a client web part that has an iframe that points out to an HTML page somewhere, or running in this funny new animal called an app web that's an isolated domain for that particular app to run in. Think of it as sort of this weird cousin child site collection out over here somewhere, whose primary purpose is just to create a sandbox. Those are the two on-box solutions. But there's also a complete story around off-box solutions. So you can have, we use various terms, provider hosted, remote web, it all means the same thing. It means that your app is not running inside of SharePoint. Microsoft would obviously like to drive you to the Azure model for hosting those websites. Hey, if you're going to host them, why not host them with us out in Azure? So in Visual Studio 2012, we have this cool little utility called an auto-hosted app. It's one of the app types that you can choose. And what it'll do for you when you create an app is it wires everything up for you, deploys it out to a special instance of an Azure website, and wires it all back to SharePoint and everything for you. Now, these aren't designed to be heavy, big, robust deployments. We'll talk a little bit more about Azure websites and where they fit a little bit later. But they are great rapid prototyping utilities that can get you going. So before we jump right into demo, a couple of things. One, where are all my developers at? Let me see your hands. Come on, let me see you. Wake up. All right, we got some good mix of developers in there. IT pros, where are my admins? Let me see them. Keep your hands up, admins. I want you to take a deep breath. Deep breath, let it out slowly. I'm going to open Visual Studio, okay? I promise it will only hurt a little bit, okay? Bear with me on this one because in SharePoint 2013, like never before, the line between IT pro and dev is really blurred. You need to know as IT pros how these apps are being built, and the developers have to rely on you to get their apps deployed and in the process. So you need to understand how this stuff works. And devs on the other side of the picture also need to understand what's going on from the deployment model that the admins are managing. Also, I should point out, you may have noticed we've had a few difficulties with connectivity this week. The Rebel Alliance has been sabotaging our communications, and we have not yet tracked down the Rebel base. So I'm going to attempt to do these demos live. If it goes bad and we cannot communicate with the mothership orbiting above us, then I will switch back to ClickWare. I know you don't want to see static demos. I don't want to do them. I certainly did not want to spend all of yesterday screenshotting them for you. However, we need to make it through this thing, so I'm just letting you know. We'll give it a try, but if it doesn't work, we'll have to bail out on it. All right, so Visual Studio 2012, we're going to create a new project, and we're going to pick an app for SharePoint 2013. And when we do, it's going to ask us, hey, what would you like this to be called, and where would you like to put it? There's an option there for what site we're going to connect to. This would be an Office 365 site, but it doesn't have to be. It can be in your local environment if you so wish. Let me make that a little bit bigger so you can see it. And by default, it picks the auto-hosted model. There's ramifications here, so you need to understand what you're getting into. The auto-hosted model is deploying an Azure website. Azure websites are very limited in their overall functionality. They are shared websites in a VM that has a whole bunch of them on it. So think of the shared hosting model. That's how Azure websites work. There's also limitations as to what you can do from a programmatic perspective in Azure websites, okay? Auto-hosted is not necessarily what you're always going to want to do the first time around. But for prototyping purposes, it's really darn good. And it gets you there without having to worry about some of the more complex stuff I'm going to show you here in a bit. So I'm just going to choose Finish and create my app. Visual Studio is going to go through and wire up all the little piece parts that I need. And there are a lot of little piece parts. There's our app that has to get created with our client IDs and our permission requests. We have to create a ASP.NET web application. So we've got some various bits and bobs that have to go on. And if you look over here on the right-hand side, you'll see that it's all sort of created it all for us. The first one is our SharePoint app package. This is what gets deployed into SharePoint. Its primary purpose is to give you a pretty tile that you can click on to go somewhere else. Okay? And of course, we use XML for that because we just love it and can't get away from it. No, there's actually a little designer, but you'll probably be in the XML just like me. Here's what the app manifest looks like. Here's the designer. Lets you select a few options. We're going to blow past that. We don't use those. We're developers. Okay, here's the XML. This is what it looks like. We're going to look at a more complex example here in a little bit. But the things that you're concerned about are the starting page. This is passes a token, says remote app URL. This is where it's going to go when it gets deployed into Azure. You don't control that at this particular juncture. If you want more control over that, you have to step up to a web role that we'll look at in a little bit. And it also passes in some information that we're going to need to know about who our app is and where it's coming from. Okay, we won't dig too deep into this at the moment because we're going to go deeper in this when we go into our web roles, but that's what the app looks like. Our default page here, yes, it's an ASPX page. I know I said HTML and JavaScript, but you know. Hello, Vegas. It's beer time. All right. So we got a little ASPX page we're going to deploy and push it out there to the web. However, there's one other thing you need to know about, and that is when we deploy this, we have to have a way to identify who the user is coming from SharePoint over into Azure. That's through something called token handling. And this little file here called tokenhelper.cs. If you're wondering what that guy is in there for, you probably can't even see it because it's so small over there. There's our buddy token helper over there. If you are doing an ASP.NET implementation that comes with the tools out of the box, you will have the tokenhelper.cs file. If you are doing LAMP, PHP, Node.js, something else, you ain't got one. Sucks to be you. Come over and do some real coding. No, I'm just kidding. All that stuff will come in time. There's actually a lot of good presentations here on developing on some of those alternative platforms. It's just the out-of-the-box tools are built for the Microsoft inclusive story, as you would imagine they would be. So the token helper file is there. You absolutely need it, and we'll go into detail on why and how that works. But for now, all we're going to do is we're going to press F5. And if this works, if we're cloudy, it'll make it out there. Hopefully. It's running down there. You'll notice, or maybe you didn't notice, that I was deploying to a site collection instead of deploying to the root. I was deploying to a site collection called Sites Demo. There's something you need to know before you press F5, and that is, in SharePoint 2013, you can't just sideload your code into any old SharePoint site. No worky. You'll get an error, says deployment failed, because you can only deploy code from Visual Studio to sites that are created using the developer template. You have to go, if you're in Office 365, for example, you have to go create a new site collection and pick the developer site template, or it ain't going to work. So if you've already gone out and gotten a tenant to test this stuff out on, and you're wondering why your code won't deploy, it's probably because you're trying to deploy it to the root, and that ain't never going to happen. So remember to use the developer site template whenever you want to deploy code directly from Visual Studio. Oh, come on. Yes. All right. So it's going to come up and say, hey, you're trying to deploy an app. I need you to approve this app and say it's okay for it to execute some basic functions. And it tells you what those functions are there. Are you going to trust it? Absolutely. Yes, I trust it. I wrote it. Of course I trust it. All right. Now, if you watch what the URL is doing, if I can get up there, there it is. If you watch what the URL is doing once it actually switches over, you'll see that it's actually pointing back to my local host. So I went out to Office 365, deployed an app out in the cloud, and when I clicked on it, it brought me put all the way back into my local host environment so I can debug. Okay? And you can see there's a little bit of text, my wishful thinking that we put into the app there. And then when I close the browser, it takes me right back out of debug mode. So a very quick way to get your apps in to Office 365 or an on-prem environment. This doesn't have to be Office 365, although auto-hosted stuff is a little tad difficult to get running in an on-premise environment. There's other ways to do that if you want to run on-prem. I had a clicker here somewhere, maybe. Anybody see where I left my clicker? There we go. All right, so moving along. Let's talk about data. Our app is going to need to consume data. We're going to need to get it from SQL, probably SharePoint, maybe even Office as well. How are we going to do it? Well, primarily, we're going to do it, if we're talking to SQL, via WCF with JSON and XML. If we're talking to SharePoint, we'll be doing it through REST and the client-side object model with OAuth in between. And if we're doing it to Office, yes, we do have a developer story, an apps developer story for Office in 2013. It's primarily HTML, Office XML, and you can do a little bit of JSON stuff in there as well. So this is how you're going to consume data. Notice that those are all asynchronous methods of consumption. Get used to managing success, failure in your code, and chasing down all those asynchronous calls because that is the new way forward. All right, we're going to look briefly at a pattern for doing this. It's a little bit involved, so I'm going to skim through it as quickly as I can so that the admins don't try and sneak out the back door. What we're going to look at is a model for creating end-to-end data solutions in this new environment. So let me set the stage for you. We have a remote web. It's running as a web role out in Azure. Okay? I have my Office 365 site. My Office 365 site takes me to the web role. The web role gets a little bit of list data from SharePoint via REST, but mostly what it's doing is consuming a whole bunch of SQL data that's also hosted in Azure. All of the code is running in HTML and JavaScript. So I need an asynchronous method via JavaScript to get my data out of SQL Server. Okay? The way that I'm going to do that is to build a WCF service that handles JSON, both as the input and the output for my data. To make it easy on myself, I'm going to use the Entity Framework so that I don't have to hand code all of those stored procedures and all of the methods and classes. What you see here is my Entity Framework, and if I switch over to the model browser, you can see I've got all my function imports and everything in there over on the right. Those map over to my stored procedures. Okay, all of that is consumed by... No, I really don't want to check it out of TFS. Thank you very much, though. All right. We have a data service that is part of our solution. If I zoom in over here, you can see on the right-hand side, there it is, data.svc. The reason that I have it included in the solution is so I don't have to worry about the cross-domain stuff when my app is talking to itself and to SQL. I'm going to have a data service. This data service has two primary types of methods, gets and posts. That's it, nice and simple. Everything is done with JSON, so I have all my methods attributed for the JSON calls. Now, this particular pattern is one that I use, having been working this app story for the past almost year. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the pattern that you use, but I found it to be pretty robust and easy to duplicate on project after project by following this method. Up to you whether or not you actually want to do it this way. Let's take a look at what some of these are doing. So we'll take a look at one of these. This is getting some information out of SQL. It's going to invoke my entities, make a call to the entity framework using the method, which executes a stored procedure and brings it back to me. Now, here's where it gets interesting. In order to send it back to JavaScript, it needs to be in JSON format. Okay, so I have to stringify it if you're a JavaScript person, or serialize it if you're a .NET person, and send it back in the proper manner. It's expecting a result.d format with the brackets and curly braces and all the things that it does. So once I have my data in an ienumerable object, I can then put it into a new variable in the proper format, serialize it, and spit it back down out to JSON. In my JavaScript, I will be making a call. What was that method called? Get all engineer details. So all engineer. There it is. So I can make an Ajax call. Here in my code, I can go out and reference that URL. I'm doing a get in this case. So it comes back to me in JSON. I parse it out, and I do something with it. In this case, I'm doing another callback and adding it to something. Okay? I repeat this process over and over and over and over in my application. When I need to do a post, I create an object in JavaScript in JSON format, package it up, send it to the data service. The data service has a data contract on the back end that matches up all those string values in a class. When it comes in, it automatically reads that for me, passes it through to my stored procedures in the entity model. Okay? It's a lot of code, but once you've done this a few times, the pattern of doing this is exceptionally rapid. Again, it's not the only way to do it. You have lots of options. That just happens to be the way that I do it. I'd be glad to debate other ways with you if you want, but mine is best. Okay, so moving on, talking about the client object model. There are essentially two types of the client object model we'll be working with in this release. for off-box solutions. Why do I say only two when there are technically three types of the client object model? Can anybody tell me what those three are? Silverlight, .NET, JavaScript, right? So, okay, Silverlight we're not really using anymore, but we sort of are in our Win8 apps, right? You're not going to use the JavaScript client object model in your remote solutions. Anybody know why? Because it doesn't work. That's why. Simple, right? Doesn't work. You won't use it. There's no way to establish context off box. You have to be on a SharePoint hosted solution in order to use the JavaScript object model. Okay. So in your remote web solutions, and this may only be a problem now that will be solved in the future, but as we stand today, you can't use the JavaScript object model in your remote box solutions. You have to use the .NET CSOM and REST to exchange data. Okay. The .NET version of the client object model, synchronous, runs on the server, primarily exchanges data with SharePoint. That's what it's designed for. The JavaScript model, on the other hand, is asynchronous, runs on the client, and can exchange information with both Office and SharePoint. So the JavaScript object model stuff you will use in your apps for Office because it's the only thing that you have available to you. And you're also running inside of an Office client, so it has the capability to get all the context and stuff that it needs. So we can't ignore it. It's still going to be there as part of our solution story. And if you're building apps that run inside of SharePoint, you will probably be using the JavaScript object model. Just remember not to attempt to use it in your remote web projects because it just won't work. All right, one of the most important things that we have to worry about is our client context. Without context, we can't do anything. And the only way to get context is through some sort of authentication. I'm sorry, see, I messed myself up. Authorization mechanism. SharePoint handles the, or IIS, I should say, handles the authentication piece. We're only worried about authorization. So let's look at how we deal with getting context. So I'll switch back over here to the auto-hosted app, and I'll go to the default page, and we'll look at the code behind. And this is created for you by default. You don't actually need to response.write. You just need to load your client context in order for any of your REST calls and such to work. So I told you the token helper file was important. It's actually very important, unless you want to rewrite all this code yourself, because you can let it do all the token handling for you. It's a big file. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there for managing all this client context stuff. The good news is you don't have to write that. All you have to do is call this method, using it, do the get client context. The parameters that it's looking for, host web context host and request URL, those come over in the post operation from SharePoint to your remote web. Okay? You'll see them in the web forms. If you look at it in Fiddler, you'll see it come over where it makes the post and it has the token with it. With that token, it can then go on and establish authorization. I'm going to show you in a bit how that works in a little bit more detail. But the point is, you need to get this client context before you can do anything else. You don't have to necessarily do anything with it, but if you have no client context, you won't be able to exchange data with SharePoint. Your REST calls will fail unless you construct them yourself manually with all the XML, HTTP stuff and posting all the bearer tokens and all that. If you really want to go through all that, all right, go for it. But if you're lazy, like me, use what's already there out of the box. Moving along. Okay. Now we're going to get serious about how this token authorization works because it's really darn important. And I'm going to show you in one simple slide how easy it is to understand. Or not. Yeah. Okay, so let's have some fun with this. We're going to illustrate how this works. I need four volunteers from the audience. Give me four people. I have swag for you if you come up and play my little game. Get up here. Stokes, come on. You too. Come on. And one more. I need a girl. Come on. We can't have just a bunch of guys up here. Let me have a lady come on over here. All right. Fantastic. Come on and join us. Come on, Matt. Get up here. Come on. All right. So this is what we're going to do. I'm going to teach you how token handling works in SharePoint 2013. We have our lovely client over here, right here. We have STS, our security token service in ACS. We have our remote web here, and we have SharePoint over here. Now, they are all going to have to talk to each other, and what they all really want is this little guy right here. He's our token. That's what they're after. So the token starts with our client. Now, the client is making a call to our app. Where specifically the first request they're making is to SharePoint. They're going into SharePoint first. So I want you to give the token to SharePoint. All right, SharePoint, who is this person? You have no idea. Who are you going to call? STS, call your token server. Give it to him. Does this person have access? Fantastic. I was afraid you were going to say no, then I was going to have to get my lightsaber out after you. All right, so this person does have access. Give it back to SharePoint. They're okay. This person is cool. Fantastic. They can move along. Give your token back to the client so they can do something with it. Fantastic. Now, the client, what you really want to do is you want to go to the app because that's where you're trying to get your information. Give it to the app. All right, app, who is this person? No idea. Who are you going to call? STS. STS, does this person have access? Give me the right answer. Okay, back to the app you go. Okay, app, you want to get some information from SharePoint, yes? Give that token over to SharePoint. SharePoint, you're going to give him back some cool REST data. Give that man back his token. And finally, you've got the data you want. Everybody has talked to each other. Give it back to your client. And that's a nice, easy, simple, straightforward process, right? Maybe not. A hand for all our volunteers. Now, look, I said I have swag, and I do. Don't go away. So for everyone up here that came and played my silly game, if I can dig my swag out of the bag, I have some very appropriately themed swag for you. All right? Since we're going with this concept, we're going to stick with it. All right? I know who Darth Vader goes to. There you go, Bubba. All right? C-3PO and two R2-D2s. There you go. Thank you very much. Appreciate you playing my game with me. All right. So this can get a little goofy. And if you think there are opportunities for things to go wrong here, you're absolutely right. There are lots of opportunities for things to go wrong. And the one thing that you're going to find the most difficult is our friend STS. Because STS is primarily in the cloud, Azure ACS. Setting up Azure ACS on-prem is nobody's idea of a good time. It's exceptionally difficult to do. In fact, we really didn't make the cut for it in SharePoint 2013. So there is an alternate model when you're hosting on-prem solutions called S2S, or server-to-server, or HITRUST. Where you basically create your own security token service and use a Windows identity to do what we just did. This little tango requires a lot of requests going back and forth. It's very chatty, so think about that when you're creating your apps. The pattern that I like to follow is I like to cache tokens in the cookie for a short period of time, so if users are making repeated requests to me, I don't have to go back out to ACS every time asking for those. I can cache them a little bit. It's up to you, though, really, how you want to handle how that works. Okay? We looked a little bit about how that works, so I'm going to move on from here and try and maximize the time that we have left. The really only difficult part of the token handling is when you're doing server-to-server on-premise because the setup and configuration is rather lengthy. I will be talking about tomorrow morning in my presentation, or if you haven't read it already, on my blog I have a complete walkthrough of how to set up HITRUST. Apps in SharePoint 2013, and it's about a mile and a half long. It's great reading if you have insomnia. Okay, REST. Let's talk about REST. This is primarily how we're going to exchange data with SharePoint in 2013. It's a very simple model. We have the client talks to the client SVC web service, exchanges some OData, the client service talks to the server object model, which talks to the database, thank you. And sends the information back, all right? Very simple model, and once you understand how it works, relatively straightforward to implement with some gotchas. There are always gotchas. All right, let's look at exchanging some REST data. So if I want to make a call into SharePoint to get some list item data, I have to do it in a very specific fashion. There's a couple of different REST services I can call. You'll primarily be working with getting list items out of SharePoint for the most part, so you're probably working with the core API. But there's also one for search and one for social, much more robust, shall we say, than they were in SharePoint 2010. The basic structure is still the same. It's an OData service, so it's exactly what you're used to doing. But there's a few things you need to know before you go down this path. First of all, you got to deal with cross-domain, right? No way around it. You got a remote web trying to talk to SharePoint. You have a cross-domain JavaScript problem. Fortunately, there is a library included with SharePoint 2013 called sp.requestexecutor.js. You can take it out of the layouts 15 directory. It will handle all that for you. It creates the little hidden iframe and does its whole thing to manage the cross domain. All you have to worry about is setting up the executor object, as you can see here that I've done, calling a new request executor with the app web URL. Something you're going to need to know, because this will trip you up, is in order to get data out of a SharePoint site, you actually need to call the app web, not the host web. So when you create a SharePoint 2013 app, if it meets certain requirements, it creates this funny little child site collection I was talking about earlier. This is sort of our new implementation of the sandbox. It exists there so you're not munging up the host web, that it came through and it can run in isolation. But to get the data that you're looking for, you would think, and I would think, I would just call the host web, right? Because I can type it into a browser, take host web slash API web list, get my data, right? No, that's not how you're going to do it from your REST calls in your remote app. You're going to call the app web, and you're going to pass a token that tells it what the host web is. You following me so far? Okay. I'm going to call you so you can tell him that I'm calling. Okay. And you need to do it in this funny little mechanism that I show you here, where I have the passing in this token, telling it where to go via the app web, and passing in the rest of my REST data call. A little strange, I know, but that's how it works. You can go directly to the host web if you wish, but you're going to have to do it without request executor and write your own handling for that, and do all your own setup and teardown. So this is an easier method. Another gotcha. Here's one for you. That little auto-hosted app that we created earlier, yeah, it didn't have a WSP in it, so an app web didn't get created. So my REST calls won't work. Okay? I'm not sure at this point if that's a bug or a feature, but if you're going to be making REST calls, what you want to do is add an artifact to your app to make sure that it does something, anything. Doesn't matter what it is, like deploying sample TXT to a library, okay? Doesn't matter. As long as there's a SharePoint artifact in your app, it will create an app web for you, and you can now call, you make your REST calls using this method. That'll get you big time the first time around if you're not aware of it. Okay, so the call is made. Where are we over here? The call is made. It returns me my data. And I can now process it. One thing you need to be aware of, if you worked with this in beta 2, you didn't need to specify OData equal verbose. You do now in RTM, so make sure that's on your call. And then once you get it, you can do stuff with it, as I am doing in this app right here. So let's go ahead and, fingers crossed again, F5 this guy and see if it worked. With any luck, it'll go out and fetch our data from our SharePoint site and render it for us once it eventually, maybe, gets deployed. In this particular case, I've got some images in an image library, and I'm binding them to just a jQuery slider gallery component. Nothing real fancy there. In case you didn't know, the URL for an image in a SharePoint picture library is in the field called required field. Of course, that's what I would have named it, default out of the box, not like picture URL or something. Those are always fun to find. Okay, maybe eventually we'll get deployed here. Perhaps. Maybe. Incidentally, one thing you may notice in my particular code is that over here on the right-hand side, I've got all of the referenced files. I have the SP files, sp.ui.controls, and SP request executor pulled out of SharePoint and bundled in my solution. There are sometimes some issues with calling those. If you look in the sample documentation, it'll show them to call them like a CDN call out to SharePoint. That doesn't always work, and the timing can be a little bit off on that, so I like to just extract them and put them into my app and bundle them together. Okay, there we go. Here's our Cowboy Hats application. It's ready to be deployed. Do we trust it? Of course we do. And we're going to say yes, okay, and it's going to go out, go to our remote web, and make our request to SharePoint and get some data. Ignore the error message on the right. And there we have our cowboy hats coming from our image library in SharePoint. Huh? How about that? I know you're all not nearly as impressed with that as I am. Okay. Notice something. Notice there's a little bit of branding up in there. It kind of sort of looks like SharePoint. This is something called the Chrome control that they make available to us in SharePoint 2013. The problem, of course, with having a web that runs off Box is you lose all continuity. It doesn't look like SharePoint anymore. There's no quick launch menu on the left, right? You really are out of the environment. So they give us the Chrome control that we can use to add that little bit of SharePoint Chrome into our app. And here's the code for it. It's actually pretty straightforward. You specify some options. Those are here. Give it the app and host web URL that it's going to need. Tell it the div you have on the page that you want to attach this to, and set it to true. And it'll render that little bar up top for you. You can also specify a couple of quick link actions and things that you can do on there. It's minimal, I know, I get it. There's not a lot there, but at least it gives you some continuity between SharePoint and your remote app that you're delivering to the user. All right. Back over to the deck. All right, let's talk about delivery. Now that we've got all these really cool SharePoint apps hanging around, how do we get them delivered and pushed up into SharePoint and the marketplace and et cetera, et cetera? Well, let's start by talking a little bit about the various components of Azure that we're going to have to know about before we decide what the best delivery model is for our solution. Let's start with the Azure SQL databases. They come in two flavors, web and business. The only difference between those two flavors is how much data you can put in them. So think of the old SQL Express, SQL Server kind of thing. You can have 1 to 5 gigabytes or up to 5 gigabytes in a web SQL Azure database. You can have up to 150 gigabytes in a business SQL database. You may not have more than 150 gigabytes. So if you have really large databases, you have to think carefully about how you're going to use Azure as a solution for what you're trying to achieve. There's some federation mechanisms you can use to try and get around that, but really that 150 gig limit is a pretty hard limit on the platform. So take that into account when you're designing your overall infrastructure. There are some functional limitations of SQL database. It's not the full onboard SQL implementation that you're used to. One of the things that'll get you right off the bat is you can't use the Visual Designer and Manager for anything. So you can't go in and select top 1,000 rows and edit and do all those fun things. It's all T-SQL. So you have to write it all yourself. Also, we can be pretty lazy about the kind of databases and tables we create. I, for one, am a particular perpetrator of not putting a primary key on my table because I just don't care. I don't need one. I don't need yet another auto incrementing integer field. But you must have them before you can send a database up to SQL Azure. So if you're working on-prem, make sure all of your tables have primary keys or they won't deploy into SQL Azure. They do have to be converted. You can't just take a database and say, I'm just going to push this up into Azure. You have to convert it before you can move it. Fortunately, there's a really good CodePlex tool for that, that will go through and analyze your database, tell you what needs to be fixed, generate the script that then runs up in SQL Azure to deploy the database. If you have a lot of data that you need to transfer, it will create what's called a backpack file for you that you can then put on persistent storage in Azure and deploy your database from that. One of the good things, or one of the great things about the SQL Azure deployment is you have full control over the VM that it's on. So you can actually get on the VM and monkey around with it. For the most part, I normally don't need to. I have SQL Manager running locally. That's enough to connect to the database and do what I need to do. But if you do need to control the VM, you have that capability. Azure Virtual Machines, next up. This is exactly what it sounds like. It's what we've been waiting for quite some time now. It's a full-on virtual machine that you can run out in the cloud. You can configure that from extra small, which I think is 768 megs of RAM and like a single core 1 gigahertz virtual processor, all the way up to 16 cores and 60 or 78 gigs of RAM and what have you. You can scale these VMs really, really large. They solved the persistent storage problem. So now you have persistent storage in the cloud. Before, when our VMs got shut down, we lost everything. That's not the case now. You can treat it like any other VM platform, as if you were, say, running Hyper-V in your own environment. You're pretty much getting the same thing out there in Azure. You can create your virtual networking. So you can, if you wanted to, you could run an entire SharePoint farm in Azure by setting up your virtual networking and making that happen with the various different sizing that you have available to you. And again, you have full control over these boxes. So you can log into them and configure them to your heart's content. Okay. Now, as you can imagine, those are the two most expensive options, right? Down there at the bottom, that little full control thing means they're giving you a full VM and you're going to pay for it whenever it's on. Okay. I would suspect that SQL is going to be on all the time, or you don't have a very mission critical application. You can actually get an Azure website plus a Web SQL database for free. And if you have a MSDN subscription, you can step that up a little bit, actually, and play around this stuff without it costing you any money, which is good. So let's talk about the next step, which is a web role. A web role is an Azure virtual machine with some limitations around it. You can't directly control some of what's going on inside of that machine. You can share web roles with others, so think of a multi-tenant model. You can also reserve a web role that is kind of a misnomer, that is just your web role. It means that particular VM isn't being used by anyone else, but you're on a shared VM structure anyway. Third-party assemblies can be deployed to an Azure web role. It's not very straightforward how you do that. I'm going to show you in a minute how to get around that particular limitation. You can do all of your standard stuff that you're used to doing for ASP.NET applications. You got TFS and Git and web deploy and all that sort of stuff. You can do all those things. You have limited control over that virtual machine. There are some things that are really going to get you, like the fact that the Windows Identity Foundation is not included on the standard web role deployment. So if you want any SharePoint 2013 app to run in an Azure web role, you have to deploy the Windows Identity Foundation DLLs yourself. Only, you don't have control of the VM. So I'm going to show you a really sneaky way to do that. All right, Azure websites. This is the bottom of the chain. This is just your basic shared multi-tenant websites. They're free for the most part. You can get a Azure website to do just about anything you want, which is really cool. They only contain the default assemblies. You cannot change that. You may not deploy things like Windows Identity Foundation to an Azure website. The ones that are used in the auto-hosted are a special implementation of Azure websites for the SharePoint team and Office 365. Just going out and getting an Azure website, you won't be able to do any kind of authorization for your SharePoint app. Same thing applies, TFS, Git, web deploy, all that sort of stuff, and you have absolutely no control over those. You need to think about, when you're designing your solutions, which one you're going to use. And it needs to be a conversation with IT pro admins and the developers, because there's a lot of cost component here if you get it wrong. If you go too big or don't size it appropriately, this can get rather expensive very quickly. So you need to think about which one of these is appropriate for you. Over in the CFO's office, they'd rather you be using websites and web editions of SQL databases because it doesn't cost them anything. In order to actually deploy our applications, we probably need something a little bit more robust. So there's a little bit of give and take there. All right, let's talk about deploying an Azure web role. There's a very specific way that you have to do it. And let's look at how that works. Where are we? Okay. So here's a big application, and what I want you to focus on is the solution structure over here on the right. You can see that I have a Azure, what happened here? Can we see it now? Well, I saw it. I don't know what your problem is. It's right there. Okay, so we have an Azure project that has basically just some configuration files in it. This is what gets pushed up to Azure. And then we have this thing called a web role. That's just what it names it by default. When you create the solution, you don't have to call it web role. But you do need to use the template that Visual Studio gives you, so it wires those two together. Mostly what you're concerned about, the web role itself is just your ASP.NET website. Don't let it fool you. It's got a class in there called webrole.cs that it deploys by default that needs to be there. Other than that, it's just a regular ASP.NET website. What you need to be concerned about is the Azure solution itself, because this is going to define all the parameters for deploying your app. Where is it? There it is. Okay. So this is where you're going to specify things like, get over here. Okay. Whether it's running full or partial trust, how many instance counts it's using, what the VM size is, etc. You're also going to define here your HTTP and HTTPS endpoints. Pay careful attention to that, because SharePoint apps in RTM only work on HTTPS. They do not work on HTTP. You must have an SSL endpoint. You don't have to have a certificate if you're in development. You can use a locally generated certificate for dev. You just get the certificate warning when you go to browse the site. But when you go to production on this, you must have an SSL certificate for your Azure instance. So you're going to have to define those endpoints. And you're going to have to go in there, and you're going to have to tell it, in fact, we're going to look at the code because it's easier. Right? You're going to have to tell it what your thumbprint is for that certificate. You have to upload the certificate into Azure beforehand and specify all this stuff in the configuration file. Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. In order for us to use Token Helper, we must have Windows Identity Foundation. Windows Identity Foundation, Microsoft.identity.dll, does not get deployed as the standard Azure web role. We have to get it into Azure. In order to do that, we use this little trick called startup right here in our configuration file. It says run this command line task. Okay? The name of that alone should tell you what I'm doing. Register GAC, okay, it's our good old friend GACUtil who won't die. We'll be using GACUtil forever. So what this is basically telling is, once you deploy this, go run this custom script over here when the VM is spinning up. In the script, and here it is down here, register GAC command, in the script I'm simply saying GACUtil this assembly for me. I've put that assembly in my bin, set it to copy only to the directory so it's out there. I then have to include GACUtil, which you can't reference locally on the box, has to be in your solution. So I have to call GACUtil. You'll see it over here in my solution. There it is, GACUtil right there. So I'm basically telling it to run something on the box in order to register my assembly. Where did that go? Over there. So that's my startup task. This command is missing from an Azure website, which is why you can't use it for SharePoint apps to do authorization, and you have to use the Azure auto-hosted ones that already have those DLLs on them. So what I'm saying here is, you got to use web roles if you're going to do SharePoint apps in Azure, okay? Unless you're doing an auto-hosted one. And you have to remember to deploy the DLLs, otherwise it's going to fail on you. Here's the good news, you can deploy any DLL this way. It doesn't have to be the Microsoft Identity DLLs. If you're using a third-party tools, let's say you're using the Telerik controls or something of that nature in your application, or you have a utility class that you use for all your apps, put them in here. You can deploy all of them this way onto that box using the startup command. Okay? That's how you get around that particular limitation in your Azure web role. I'm not going to do a deployment because it is literally a go-and-get-a-cup-of-coffee exercise. You set it to deploy, and what it actually does is it deploys your package, and then it regens a VM. So it adds to a script, starts up a VM with all your stuff on it. So you sit there and wait for the green bar to go, until it's finally done, okay? And we just don't have a spare 10 minutes to waste right now, so we're not going to do that. Moving along. Office 365. Come on, y'all, that's a funny slide. Come on. Seriously. All right. Things you need to know about deploying apps for Office 365. HTTPS only, I mentioned that to you. You have to generate unique app IDs. There's a way that you do this in Office 365. I will show it to you. This is the same for your on-premise applications as well. You must generate an app ID and a client secret, and you must embed them in your code. There are two ways you can get your apps into Office 365. Well, three, I guess, technically. You can use the Office Store, right? So if it's a third-party tool and you've had it validated and whatnot, you can put it in the Office Store and it's available for purchase. You also have something called the App Catalog, which you create on a per-tenant basis. So if you just want to make things available in your 365 implementation that are home-brewed or built in your organization or what have you, you don't have to put them in the Office Store. You can put them in your own App Catalog. If you want to do an F5 dev deploy, you must remember to have a developer template site in place to deploy that to. You can't deploy it to just any old site. And you can do single or multi-web deployments of your code. And if you're going to put it into the Office Marketplace, you need to think about how you're going to do the licensing for that. But these are the basics of deploying things into Office 365. So I already showed you how to do an F5, and it just gets up there and goes out to a developer site. But to put something into an app catalog and make it universally available, right, you have to do a little bit of a different dance. So if I go over here to Office 365, and I go to the admin section. Here we go. Here's my admin site. I have this link here called App Catalog. I can go to the App Catalog, and if there's not one there already, it will prompt me to create one, and it's just basically creating a special site collection. When that site collection gets created, you go to Apps for SharePoint, and you can add them here into your store. So I'm going to see if I can switch over here real quick. Line.admin.sharepoint.com. Let's see if this will let me log in. It wasn't letting me log in earlier. Let's give it a try. Maybe. Sign in as a different user. Yes, please. And let's see if it lets us do this so I can show you it actually getting deployed in the catalog. Okay. I typed that correctly without messing it up. Wow. That may be the first time this week. All right, no, I didn't. I spoke too soon. Shame on me. Come on now. There we go. Okay, so this gets me into my admin section, and I can go over here to apps and go to my app catalog. So here's this telling me I don't have one. I'm going to have to create a new app catalog site, so you can choose okay, and it'll go out and spin one up for you. And create the site collection, okay? So you give a title and you say app catalog, right? Blah, 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 blah. Apps and do your thing, right? This will probably take too long, I would guess. It's not even resolving the person. Very cool, there it goes. Give it a quota. Must have a quota. Now this is probably gonna sit and spin for a while. Oh, bother. Okay, fine, we'll switch back over to the other one. So I will show you, pulling one out of the oven already baked, I will show you what it looks like when they're already there. Hey now. So here's one that already has a bunch of apps available to it. When I click on apps and do choose an app, it's going to go out and say, hey, here's a bunch of apps you can add, and oh, by the way, there's ones that are in the app catalog that are custom that we've created. You can set them to be featured and show up at the top of the list and all that jazz. All you're really doing is uploading them to a document library. That's what it comes down to in the end. Oh, this one's even longer. MS. Oh, lovely. Dash. Is there an O in admin? Not last time I checked. Okay. In any event, you add them to the library, you specify, yeah, thank you very much. One of the demos had to go wrong. So you just add them to the document library, you specify what your app name and whatnot is, and it puts them into the global catalog that you can then use in any of your, in that particular tenant. Bear in mind, though, that they'll have to do this on a site-by-site, site-collection-by-site-collection basis, so whenever they want to go to add an app, they're going to need to go and pick it out of the list and add it to that site collection, okay? All right. Publication, you have the Office Store available to you if you wish. You'll have to go register and get a developer ID and all that stuff. It's the public store that you can sell your apps through or give them away for free. It does have both app and package validation. So much like the other stores that are out there, they're actually going to look at your code and make sure you're not doing something wonky before they let your app come into the marketplace. They will also validate that the package is valid for deployment. And there's a whole licensing framework that you need to be aware of. It can be done per user or per site. There's some options available to you there. And I'm not a licensing expert, so I'm not going to give you any bad advice on how to do that. The app catalog is private, internal. There is package validation on that, by the way. If you upload a Mankey app package, it will tell you, no, that's not going to work. And there's no licensing involved in doing a localized app catalog. Okay. So I was trying to deploy an app to Office 365 before it so rudely told me it wasn't going to let me do that. So we're going to try that one more time. See if we can get this one over here. A lot of typing. Yay. Okay, let's go back to the apps. All right. So here in my app catalog, in order to deploy a new app over to the app catalog, I would simply go into apps for SharePoint, and I would add a new app here, and then you browse to find your app. Now, in order to get, you have to get the right package in order to do this. So let's go to, go down here, and let's get this package. If you look in your web, you'll have a bin, right? And you're looking for the app package. But in order to have an app package, you have to actually publish this first. So I'm going to go back over here to my app, and I'm going to say publish this. So that I can have, if I pick the right one, I'll be able to publish it. There we go. I publish it, right? When I publish it, what it's actually going to do is it's just going to create the app file for me. Are you kidding me? Oh. Let's exclude that. Thank you. And let's publish this guy. Okay, so we're going to publish. Now, the act of publishing makes you think it's actually going up into Office 365. It is not. It is just creating this app file for you right here. From Office 365, then, in my app catalog, I'm going to browse that directory and find my package, if it will let me, please. Thank you. Please let me have it. Come on, then. Or not. Let's get this here. Yay! There it is. All right, and I'm going to add it up into my catalog. Okay, it's going to do its package validation when I upload it, and it's going to assign it its product ID and put it into the catalog. This shouldn't take long. Yeah, right. I believe you. Hopefully, eventually, it'll get in there. See, that error message is lying. Okay, so while it's churning and burning, what it's doing is putting our app up there. What did it say? Oh, we're still working on it. Oh, all right, yay, it's in there. So we're going to save it. I said save, and it's, there it goes, and it shows up down here in the bottom. So now I can go to here, go to my site contents, and say add an app, and you'll see in the list somewhere is my app. Oh, I didn't tell it to be featured. Shame on me. Where is it? Oh, bogus. It should be there. It's not there. Wow, awesome. Cool. Oh, actually it is right here. This is ours, SP 2012 demo. Wow, okay, it did get in there. Something worked today. All right, so that's how you publish it out to the app catalog, so it's available on the public site once you've done the whole developer template thing and verified that the app works and all that jazz. That's how you get it out there. Typically, you'll probably hand that off to an administrator, let them deploy it out to the app catalog for you, hopefully. All right, so I told you we've got a couple minutes left, and I told you we were going to talk about a little bit of a real-world scenario going from an on-premise app to an app out in the cloud. And that's exactly what we're going to do. I'm going to show you an app that was built in SharePoint 2010 for doing, this is a demo app, for doing help desk tickets, okay? Common app that we create for demos. So we built one out in SharePoint 2010. It's rather straightforward, and this is what it looks like. SharePoint 2010, I've got a bunch of Webpart pages. These Webpart pages hold my Webparts that do all of the work. So here's my little grid for my issues. This is how I manage stuff. I can create a new issue here. Notice the postbacks. And I can go in and fill all this stuff out and fill in the fields and do all that fun stuff. And I can go in and view existing ones that already exist. Another beautiful postback. And so there's our traditional SharePoint 2010 app. We have some menu actions here, right, where we have some settings, and we can go in and configure options, and oh my goodness, aren't those pages beautiful? So this is our traditional deployment story. Now, if we want to take this same application and move it into SharePoint 2013, we got a lot of work to do, because first of all, we're not doing any web parts, right? Second of all, we're going to have modern UI pages, so we're not going to have a lot of this postback nonsense going back and forth. We've really got to figure out how we're going to pretty this app up. So we're going to take this exact same content, and I'm going to show you how we built it for SharePoint 2013. So back to the site that we were just on. If I go to, nope, that's not the right one. Yeah, it is. MS demo. All right, and I go to site contents. And we should see one here called, where it is, Help Desk Demo. So I'm going to click on this guy over here. Oh, I'm logged in as the wrong person. Hang on a minute. That won't work. Let's try this again. MS. Otherwise, I will have bad token mojo. All right, let's see. R. Smith. You have no idea how tired I am of typing this particular URL. Over and over and over, and the password. Oh, come on. Aha. You see how tired I am? I left off that. There we go. There we go. All right, now we've got the right person in there. So now we're going to go back to the app having the right individual. Okay, so here's our SharePoint Help Desk demo. We're going to click on it. It's going to take us over to our app. Ooh, look, we have tiles. Huh? That's awesome. Okay? That's better than that yucky old grid any day. And, ooh, look, I can click on them, and I can get pop-ups, right? Ooh, look at that jQuery goodness going on, huh? Isn't that much prettier than the other one? Same information, right? Only now I have pretty pictures of people up in there. Same basic data. We've got all the stuff here that we had. And just so we don't feel left out, we do have a fancy little grid. Ooh, but check out the map stuff going down on the bottom, right? If I want to assign an issue to an individual, I can grab it from here, and I can say, I'd rather it be assigned to this fella over here, and it will reassign the issue for me. No postbacks, eh? All right. Hey, maybe I want to find out who's this guy up in Seattle that gets all his stuff assigned to him. It's a guy named Robert Smith with Keenan Newton's face on it. So I can see his little pop-up card, see what his status is, how many issues he's had assigned to him. Or I can go look at my users and say, who's this fellow over here that I need to call to discuss this issue with? There's what he looks like and all of his contact information. I can also go in and add users and change my settings. Here's all my user management, and I can set my system options and things here in the app. So that's going from old and busted in SharePoint 2010 to the new hotness in SharePoint 2013, right? With some nice modern UI and a whole lot of JavaScript on the back end. There are 2,887 lines in that solution. Rock and roll. I loved writing all that JavaScript. All right. So basic idea of how you can take something that you built internally, move it up into a SharePoint 2013 app and really pretty it up and make it sexy for the new deployment model. Yes, that one took a lot of work. It was a pretty robust demo that we built, and I'm actually going to go in-depth on that tomorrow morning. I'll show you the Office side of it, the Windows Phone app that we built to go with it, and really talk in detail about all those pieces. We are at the end of our time, so I thank everyone for sitting through at the very end of a long day with me. If you're headed to the Ask the Expert section session, I'm going there. I'll stick around here for a few minutes if you have any other questions that you'd like to ask. I am required by contract to show you the last two slides or they kill me. So here I'm going to show them to you. Here's your go win something and do this thing. And then there's the final Microsoft slide on the end over there. Please fill out session evaluations. Of course, I know you're going to give me good scores because if you don't, I will find you. All right. And you will get got with the wand of motivation. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming and spending some time with me this afternoon. Appreciate it.